Hello, and welcome to the Global Venturing Review podcast. I'm Fernando Moncada, and this week we're joined once again by GCV's very own Kim Moore. Kim is a senior reporter with us and has recently written an article, the link for which you can find in the show notes, exploring a hugely important topic, namely food insecurity, a topic which has been aggravated by recent events such as Russia's invasion of Ukraine, itself building on top of an already longer-running list of themes like climate change and COVID-related global supply chain shocks. However, we've also seen a massive increase in venture capital flowing into agricultural technology around the world, which has massive potential to alleviate food shortages and maximize productivity and access to enabling services like financial technology across the industry. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe, and above all, enjoy the show. So, Kim, welcome back, and great to have you back in the hot seat. As I was just saying off camera, you're actually our first kind of repeat guest on the show. So congratulations for that perhaps dubious honor.
Thank you. I'm very honored, Fernando.
Well, you've just written an article on a really important topic with global implications, and that is food security, or lack thereof, perhaps. And multiple factors have coalesced over the past few years, and question marks have been raised about the health of the global food supply and supply chain. So I suppose to begin with, could you give us a bit of a snapshot on the global food security picture at the moment?
Yeah, sure. So the war in Ukraine, of course, is a big reason for the worsening global food insecurity. Russia and Ukraine are among the biggest producers of agricultural commodities in the world. And they're, for example, the leading suppliers of foodstuffs such as wheat and barley, and also fertilizers. So these exports really have been severely curtailed because of the war. But the war is a really big factor in kind of increasing global food insecurity. And then there's, you know, several countries in North Africa and the Middle East that are highly dependent on food imports from Ukraine. Egypt, in particular, I believe about 70% of its food imported. Jordan, Lebanon, you know, countries around that area. And so it's really made these countries extremely vulnerable. And in fact, the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations estimates that global food supply gap resulting from the war could increase food prices by up to 22%. That's above already elevated levels. So really, this is expected to increase the number of people experiencing malnutrition, particularly in those countries that are heavily dependent on imports. And of course, food price inflation is having a knock-on effect across the world, right? It's more expensive to buy food in every country. Then you have other factors, such as the supply shocks from the COVID pandemic that we're still experiencing, drought exacerbated by climate change, and then there's the rising energy prices, which makes fertilizer very expensive to produce. And so really, it's a kind of perfect storm of factors that are combining to make the food system vulnerable.
Yeah, because in addition to the kind of long-running issues, such as, you know, climate change, as you mentioned, or even supply chain shocks from the COVID pandemic, just the war in Ukraine, you have a bit of a double-edged problem there, right? Because on one hand, you have reduced agricultural capacity from Ukraine, and then on the other hand, you have reduced fertilizer exports from Russia. So that's kind of, on top of everything else that was already happening, that's an extra kind of negative boon, as it were.
Yeah, so all coming together, really, to just make the food system very, very vulnerable. And, you know, as I mentioned, you know, you have countries such as Egypt, which is just highly dependent on imports from Ukraine, and other countries that are not involved in the war. It'll take a while for them to kind of boost their production. So this is a really quite a serious situation for countries. And there really needs to be, yeah, kind of solutions put in place so we kind of avoid increasing numbers of malnutrition that's possible.
Well, on the other side, what we've also seen in tandem with the rise in these issues that you've outlined is a pretty significant increase in investment, right, in ag tech, agricultural technology. What does that investment landscape look like right now, and how's it been changing in recent years?
Yeah, you know, there's been a lot of money raised in the ag tech sector over the past 2 years. So corporate-backed deals peaked at nearly $18 billion in 2021. And so far this year, corporate-backed deals have totaled around $8 billion. So yeah, that's a lot of money raised. I've also seen like very large deals. You know, last year, deals were just much larger than usual. For example, in the third quarter of 2021, there were 28 corporate-backed deals that we tracked that totaled $7 billion. So that's more than the total raised for the whole of 2020. So the value of deals has been on the decline, however, in 2022, since that peak last year. So there were just under $1 billion of corporate-backed deals in the third quarter of 2022. So that does indicate maybe a possible slowdown in investment.
And do we have any indication of why that might be slowing down?
Yeah, I think it's maybe just factors that are affecting all kind of sectors, you know, just kind of general maybe concern about recession and economic downturn.
Well, I mean, that is a lot of corporate-backed deals, though, at least last year and continuing this year, even if it's to a slightly lesser extent. What kind of corporates are involved? Is it just the ones in the agricultural sector, or are we seeing some from outside as well?
Yeah, so there's a lot of big food businesses, right, that are really involved in the venturing space, the global venturing space. And so for this particular story, I talked to big corporate venturing units such as Leaps by Bayer. They're the corporate venturing unit of the large German biotech company Bayer. They're investing, I think, $1.5 billion in the ag tech and healthcare space over the next 3 years. So they are looking, you know, carefully at technologies that could solve global food insecurity. FMC Corporation, they have a corporate venturing unit that is FMC Ventures that is also looking to expand in the ag tech space. Now, all this money, right, is in the system and it really needs to be deployed now. So there was a huge fundraising spurt last year, and really now, yeah, they have to deploy that capital. So yeah, there's some interesting sort of technologies that are being talked about that could perhaps sort of solve the issue.
Well, yeah, when we talk about ag tech, what kind of technologies are we talking about? You know, where are the technological frontiers right now in the industry, and how do they help?
Right. So a big focus is finding alternatives to nitrogen-based fertilizers. So these have a big toll on the environment. They leach into lakes and streams, and this damages aquatic ecosystems. And they degrade soil. So it's just really has this kind of big toll. So now there's a lot of work that's put into developing biological fertilizers, and they contain living microorganisms, which sort of add nutrients to plants through natural processes. And they also help to build organic matter in soil. So fertilizers finding alternatives to nitrogen-based fertilizers is a big one. Another area is biotechnology, so making plants more resistant to pests and diseases and droughts. And really, this is becoming really important because of the extreme weather events that we're experiencing more frequently because of climate change. This year has been particularly bad for droughts, particularly in like areas of Europe. You know, several countries experienced the worst drought they've seen in decades, like Italy, Germany, France. And so making plants more resistant to water shortages is just really important to securing global food supply. And a final area is fintech. So, you know, almost every grower in every country takes out a loan to buy agricultural products like seeds and fertilizer. And so it's hard for farmers in emerging economies where the banking infrastructure is weak to access credit. And they often get bad terms for these loans as well. So there's a lot of emphasis on ag fintech solutions, so farmers get easier access to affordable credit.
Right. And these represent kind of different hurdles that you might find, or that farmers might find in different countries, right? So you mentioned in some emerging markets, maybe they'll need some fintech help. If you go elsewhere in the world, what would they need? What issues are they facing?
Agricultural production kind of varies enormously around the world, right? So there's different technological solutions that are better in one particular region than others. And so, for example, you know, the Asia-Pacific region is sort of interesting from an investment standpoint. It's really sort of positioning itself to be attractive towards ag tech investments. And, you know, India is a interesting case. They're very advanced in using mobile app technology. It's extremely advanced there. So there are farmers in rural parts of India that have just very good cellular phone connectivity, which is, you know, much better than in even urban parts of US or Europe. And so what you have is farmers use mobile apps there on their phone to buy and sell agricultural products so that they can buy things like fertilizer and crop insurance, but they can also sell their crops too over a mobile app. And so a lot of investment has been put into developing these mobile apps in other parts of Asia Pacific, like Indonesia, for example, Vietnam. And Singapore really has become sort of a place for corporates to sort of try to use as a base for building up kind of entrepreneurial talent. So Cargill is a large multinational food and ag corporation, and they have launched a digital business studio in Singapore in partnership with the Economic Development Board there. And they are really trying to develop startups in that digital sort of ag tech space. So Singapore has a very good banking sector, you know, quite a strong banking sector, and also lots of tech talent there as well. So yeah, the Asia Pacific region is sort of interesting for just its kind of investment potential. And then you have like places like Brazil, right, which is a very large agricultural producer, but they also with very large farms compared to other parts of the world, but they have quite a weak banking infrastructure. So this kind of like mobile technology, yeah, is not so advanced there. So yeah, it's just different solutions in different parts of the world. And I think that these large global corporate ag companies really sort of have to hone in on the different regions around the world to kind of find solutions, and are hence opening venturing projects within those countries.
In the case of Singapore, is it attractive to corporates for its ability to act as a kind of launch point for the APAC region, or are they kind of investing in it? I would imagine as a city state, it doesn't have much, a huge amount by way of kind of agricultural sites, right? So it's kind of like,
I think it is a sort of almost like a launch pad to other countries within that region. Yeah. So Singapore's, as I mentioned, has just this really well established banking sector and people that are very knowledgeable in the tech space. So it's kind of like an ideal launch pad then to invest in technologies that can be applied to places like India, Vietnam, Indonesia, those kind of countries where entrepreneurial talent maybe is a bit harder to access.
One of the things that popped out at me reading your article was about the kind of potential overlaps between ag tech investments and other sectors like healthcare. So in the piece, you have the example of Leaps by Bayer, which you mentioned just now earlier, finding synergies between the two. Can you talk a bit about that and perhaps where some other overlaps may be?
Yeah. So Leaps by Bayer is an interesting corporate venturing unit because they have both healthcare startups in their portfolio as well as ag tech startups. And what they found is there are a lot of overlaps with healthcare and ag tech. So one of their healthcare startups is called Oko, and it uses immunology and machine learning to create proteins that can treat food sensitivities, such as like peanuts and gluten allergies. And that same technology they found can be applied to wheat, which means that wheat may eventually express a naturally a version of gluten that doesn't cause allergies. So that's kind of one example of where a technology has been applied in the healthcare space, but then has kind of used and applied in agriculture. There's kind of a similar example on the digital side. So there's a lot of focus on using AI to increase the efficacy of drugs to treat human diseases. And that same AI process can be used in the ag space to discover new crop treatments, like insecticides or fungicides, for example.
Right. And speaking of AI more generally, it's a realm of technology that's really dependent on kind of data. And as with most industries, the role of data in agriculture, it's increasingly important, right? Crucial, really. So what kind of data are we talking about, and how is it collected, and how can it be used?
So yeah, data collection is huge in farming. So farmers have data coming from satellites, coming from the tractors, coming from sensors in the fields. These data sources don't often get integrated and to come up with solutions for growers. So there's really a lot of emphasis on technologies that integrate data. And one way that data can be used is in ag fintech solutions. So there are startups that are working on using AI and machine learning to figure out financing packages for farmers. So data that is collected, for example, on crop health and weather patterns, and then used to inform the size of the loan that growers can access to increase yields and profitability, for example.
Right. So yeah, it's not just to kind of utilize directly in their crop, it's to actually gain access to the services they need to kind of run their operation, like financial services.
Yeah. So it's I think it's the technology really is that, because the amount of data is just huge, and it's just getting that technology to a point where it's being used to kind of create a solution for the farmer. So there's a lot of investment in that area.
Before I let you go, Kim, I suppose there's a bit of a big picture question of, you know, is the investment on track right now to keep the food supply on par with demand? Is enough being done?
Yeah, I mean, I would hope so. A lot of the technologies that are being developed appear to be game-changing in creating more sustainable and resilient crops. You know, we have 7 billion mouths to feed, and so the war in Ukraine has shown how vulnerable the global food system is. So hopefully these technologies that I've mentioned really will go a long way to making the food system more secure. If we don't address these issues, you know, food insecurity can sort of lead to political and economic instability. So I think there is quite a lot of motivation now to just bolster the food system, just to make the world a more kind of secure place to live.
That's right. And I think that's a really important point. Food insecurity has really significant knock-on effects, geopolitically speaking. It's not just a matter of prices being inconveniently or even prohibitively high at the supermarket, right? When we're talking about the scarcity of a basic resource that humans need to survive, you don't really need to look that far ahead in the future to see conflict. So I really hope that the technologies that help prevent that from happening are getting adequate attention and investment. So thank you for writing about it and coming back on the show to talk to us a bit more about it as well. So I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Fernando. And yeah, thanks for letting me talk about such an important topic.
Absolutely. Well, I know you're traveling next week to Executive Leadership Summit in Palo Alto, so I'll let you go to prepare for that. And hopefully the trip isn't too bad. And that about does it for GVR this week. Thanks again to Kim for joining and telling us more about this important topic that ultimately affects us all. Do be sure to like, share, and subscribe to GVR, which you can catch every week on your favorite platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and wherever else. I have been Fernando Moncada. Our sound engineer is Mark Chatterley from In Ear Production, whose great work you can check out at inearproduction.com. And our intro music is by Kevin McLeod and a Creative Commons license. We'll be back again next week as usual. Until then, have a good one.